Hi, everyone. It's Eric. Wanted to let you know that this episode is going to be guest hosted by Hattie Hawks. And you may remember Hattie from previous episodes that we've done. And she is, she's fabulous. She's got some great insights, some ideas that she wants to get out to our audience, being you, as well as her audience. And we're so excited about what she's going to bring to the Spirit of EQ podcast. And we hope that, you'll recommend it to others.
Hey, welcome to the show. Hattie Hawks here. Excited to have Dr. Ken Yeager back with us today. For those of you who heard the last episode, for those of you who are just tuning in, I myself am a journalist, a trauma survivor. I am a mother of two children, and I am an advocate for those who have experienced complex trauma and an advocate for the learning of neuroscience and nervous system regulation. Okay. It is not a mainstream topic just yet, but you are one of those experts who have lived and breathed it. You understand the importance that comes with knowing this important information because it's life-changing and it helps people who have struggled with their own lives to essentially live again. Yeah. And you have seen that kind of success with people throughout your career.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So a quick rundown of trauma we talked about last time. It's essentially you experience these adverse events in life, starting at an early age, and it has a way of rewiring your brain to think and respond not necessarily in the best ways. It impacts you to a point where a lot of people start making decisions where it can go down the road of alcoholism. It can go down the road of abuse, self-abandonment. It's all of these things that we typically have a hard time talking about. But we also discussed about the fact that there is a lot of hope when it comes to this conversation because we know that there are tools.
Yes.
And nervous system regulation, for me, was a huge light bulb because I came from the world of news and fast-paced environments and having to do things now, and talking about difficult topics and trying to make sense of them in the way that was fair and accurate. And there's just a lot of pressure when it comes to a position like that. And I think people in the medical industry, lawyers, these high-pressure jobs have a lot to learn about nervous system regulation and recognizing where in their lives the need for that shows up. So let's just talk a little bit, like we can even start from the ground level on your nervous system and what it does.
Okay, sure. Specifically with relation to trauma, you know, your nervous system functions at several different levels. There's a preconscious level, there's a conscious level, there's an involuntary level. If I would say something to you like, Hattie, I don't want you to think about a parrot right now. Whatever you do, do not think about a parrot. Promise me you won't. Yeah, exactly.
I haven't stopped.
What color is the parrot?
It's a macaw.
It's a macaw. Sure, of course.
Yeah.
So that's literally what we just did is reached into your brain and pulled out a piece of your preconscious kind of central nervous system. You weren't thinking of a parrot, but you have this in your brain and it's there and it functions and it helps you make sense of the world. It's part of your grand schema of the world.
Yes.
So what happens with trauma is all of those various areas of the brain kind of begin to bump up against one another. So your conscious brain up in the frontal cortex, the front of your brain where your forehead is, and right in that area is where the complex thinking comes out of and executive functioning. So the things that get your work done on time, the things that get you to the right place when you need to be, the things that help you organize your day and your thoughts are all right up in the frontal cortex. And when a person experiences trauma, the bandwidth of your frontal cortex narrows. And it narrows because you're trying to figure out how to stay safe. Mm-hmm. And we go all the way back to 1932 in a lab in Harvard where a guy by the name of Walter Cannon came up with the fight or flight response, which is part of the brainstem. It's the Neanderthal brain. It's the survival brain. It's what makes human beings survive. So when the prefrontal cortex goes offline, the brainstem becomes more activated, mm-hmm. and you go into a fight, flight, or freeze mode. Now, when you combine the fight, flight, or freeze mode with the narrowed bandwidth in the frontal cortex, you begin to understand how trauma victims are triggered in their environment and how the environment begins to not mess with the individual's mind, but everything seems less safe once you've been exposed to trauma. And I found it so interesting when you talked about attorneys and first responders and healthcare professionals, and certainly journalists as well, because the things that you see, the things that you talk about, the things that you do every day tend to, over time, make the world seem like a less safe place.
Yes.
And if you've been traumatized on top of that, and you're moving out of your executive functioning into more of a survival mode, then the world definitely feels like a much less safe place. And you're spending all of your time and all of your effort trying to stay organized. But really, your brain is saying to you, but you've got to stay safe. Mm-hmm. It's so important that we stay safe. And so everything around you can become a trigger. Everything around you can be distracting. And heaven forbid you try to remember what you need from the grocery store, because you absolutely cannot.
You're not kidding.
Yeah.
It's hard to do. It's hard to do so many things that I once could handle. Now, I don't know if I would say that I was always really good in these areas.
Mm-hmm.
And I mentioned this last time, like career was where I found a lot of worth because it was where I poured a lot into. Mm-hmm. My career also had a hand in my trauma, which made it a little more complicated. I tend to still separate them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think one caused the other, but it certainly had to do some sort of complication within my brain. And I'm not sure I'm far enough away from that trauma to really be able to scrutinize it and, like, you know, map out, okay, so what did this do? How did this change my trajectory in the field? Because I still became relatively successful in it.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Until I shut down. Until there were other things that had happened, there was enough where I was like, there's no way that I'm going to be able to smile through this anymore.
Right.
I have to separate myself from all of it entirely to figure this out. Mm-hmm. And so I see a lot of things clearer now. But some of the challenge that I have in my recovery process is managing my nervous system, is keeping it calm and moving slow enough to do that, to care for it properly. The one thing your presence does that you've likely been trained in is the way in which you speak is slower, it's mm-hmm. calmer.
Mm-hmm.
And it has a way of, at least for me, I go into a more of a rest feel, like, oh, okay, here we are. All right. Yeah. We're back to presence. Because I can also be very like go, go, go.
Yes.
What I've always been.
Mm-hmm.
It's what I'm used to.
Right.
And it's what our culture
has become.
Is necessary.
Yes, it has.
And it's making us sick.
It's making us very unwell.
And so, what do we do to, if this is the first we're hearing about, like, oh, because, you know, nervous system, you don't really sit down at the family dinner table every night and say, how's your nervous system today? You could, but
you could.
You could, and likely in my house, I would do that.
Mm-hmm.
But not everybody does. So what are some ways that we can acknowledge that our nervous system is stressed? How do we recognize it if we're really not paying attention to our bodies like that?
Right. Most people aren't paying attention to their bodies. And you're absolutely right. 30 years of training, I talk slowly and I try to put people in a relaxed space.
Mm-hmm.
And it's part of doing therapy. You just, you develop this.
Mm-hmm.
There are upsides and downsides, because then when I'm checking out in the grocery store, the checkout person wants to tell me their life story.
I can see it.
Have one of those
I
faces.
Can 100% see it.
Yeah, it just
it's the energy around you too.
Well, yeah, you want to build a positive energy around you.
Yeah.
But, you know, you're absolutely right. Nobody at the end of the day says, wow, I'm extremely hyper. I must have high levels of cortisol coursing through my veins.
Right.
And my dopamine seems to be depleted, but my norepinephrine is way over the
right.
top right now. Nobody has those
right.
dinner conversations.
Right.
If you can cue in to the moment, to any moment, doesn't matter whether you're driving home or whatever, and just kind of check your thoughts. Where am I? What's going on? You know, what am I doing? What am I thinking about right at this moment? And you might be driving your car down, you know, I-71 at 75 miles an hour, trying to get to your next task.
Right.
And you're thinking about 15 other things at the same time.
Of course.
Fortunately, the brain is an amazing thing. It can process millions of bytes of information in a billionth of a second. There's no computer in the world that can do what the human brain can do. And even with all of that going on, you're still able to drive down the highway and not crash your car. Mm-hmm. Most days.
Yeah, most days.
Yeah. Most days. We don't check in with ourselves enough. We don't check in and say, hey, what's going on with me? What's my heart rate? I set my watch up so my heart rate pops up on my watch every time I look at it.
Okay.
So that I can see that right now, and you're going to be mad at me because my heart rate is
68 beats per minute.
Yeah. Because it doesn't make any sense to have it going 92.
Right.
When it doesn't have to be.
Right.
Yeah. You'll live longer.
And that's, I think that is part of the message that is not necessarily, I don't know if it's that it's not understood or if it's just, well, I just have to do this right now. It's this idea that you have to do this.
We have been taught we have to.
And isn't that like a level of a fight, flight, freeze response?
It absolutely is. If I don't get this done immediately, the world's going to end.
Right.
But it's not.
Right.
And in fact, you might be happier if you don't have to do everything right away. In fact, I can guarantee you, you'll be happier if you say, I'm not going to do these 10 things today.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to slow down and do three of them. And I'm going to do these three really well. And I used to say to my students, my graduate students, my medical students, whatever, give me something you're proud of. I don't need a 40-page paper. I need a 7-page paper that says something really brilliant and succinct. Take some time and give me something you're proud of. Don't judge your day on how much you got done. Rather, think about how well you did what you got done.
Mm-hmm.
And when you start to do that, you start to become more mindful of what's going on. And mindfulness is probably the primary technique for getting yourself grounded.
Yes.
It is the process of slowing down and thinking about what you're doing. It's the process of understanding what's going on around you, how that's impacting your day, slowing down when you eat so that you actually taste the meal.
Mm-hmm.
slowing down and having time to interact with your beautiful children, mm-hmm. even when they become teenagers and they don't necessarily want to.
Yeah.
Slowing down to give yourself time so that you can be in touch with you, and slowing down and understanding what's important at this moment.
And it feels like, so, and I only have the experience from being in journalism and then getting out of it and then seeing how the rest of the world kind of works. Because before I got out of it, like, I knew that there were people who said, well, it's not that high impact out here. It's not as high impact. It definitely still has its stressors, its expectation of a certain level of speed, a certain level of the amount of time you're supposed to dedicate mm-hmm. towards something that's, in my opinion, kind of outside of your own life.
Yeah.
Like your work can be really demanding of you.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to have a better understanding of how that is harmful to people on an individual level, and then also how it would actually benefit not only our culture, but, you know, these like businesses and organizations if they were to acknowledge nervous system regulation
right.
and the neuroscience behind mindfulness, and how much that would actually improve the overall productivity.
There are a lot of companies that have embraced this. They have installed tactile rooms or quiet rooms where, you know, there are things that you can go in and you can interact with little fidgets or widgets or, you know, different things that you can do. There are places with quiet spaces where you can put in earplugs and put on an eye mask. And just take time to slow down. There has been a shift post-COVID where the push is to come back into the office. But yet there isn't definitive data that says that people who are in the office are more productive. There is not definitive data that says all of this supposed networking in the office is leading to greater productivity. And there is even more evidence suggesting that a work balance, a work-life balance, is incredibly important. And if you can maintain that, and I'm going to say if, because there's really no such thing as a perfectly balanced work-life. They're always going to be competing.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea for many professionals is a 60-hour work week. And it's going at a breakneck pace.
Yeah.
Depending upon what kind of, you know, profession you're in.
Right.
And many professions, you don't get to pick when you're turned on and when you're able to turn off. So it's not as simple as just saying, well, create a work-life balance. It's being able to set the boundaries yourself and being able to slow down when you have time to slow down.
Right.
Is being able to not pick up your phone. Have you ever checked your phone to see how many times you pick it up in a day?
No.
Oh, it your phone will tell you how many times you pick it up in a day.
And the amount of time, yeah.
Yeah, and you'll be astounded by how many times a day you pick your phone up. You know, the whole fear of missing something, fear of missing out,
right.
fear of missing an email, fear of missing a text. And we are being run. I jokingly say, my watch has taken over the role that my mother had. It tells me when it's time to go to bed. It tells me when it's time to get up. It tells me it's time to exercise. It tells me how much I move, whether I move enough. And it's very easy to become a slave
right.
to the electronic master. And what we're trying to do is figure out, how do we get that balance? How can we get away from the screen? And certainly, can you get away from the blue light for at least 15 minutes before your scheduled bedtime so that you can turn off the blue light and you can begin to say, I'm going to relax. I'm going to calm down. I'm going to slow down. So the whole idea of mindfulness is taking control of the frontal cortex of your brain, moving out of the fight or flight mode, moving up front and saying, I'm going to be aware of what's going on here. And I'm going to do my best to regulate as much as I can, as often as I can.
And this is super important. So because I come from, not everybody has super complex trauma, but at the same time, like when I think about my nervous system, I'll often refer to it as a faulty light switch. Mm-hmm. Like if you were to see all the wires that were coming out of the wall. And the problem with that is that it could, sometimes the light's just going to flicker on when it's not supposed to. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's going to shut off when it's not supposed to.
Right.
And you don't know when that's going to happen. And in some cases, I would say, I mean, for me, I wasn't aware of what really was happening until the last maybe 2 years when I started really learning about this stuff, because I was not aware of what was going on in my body. I may have felt stressed, but I would ignore it because I had things that I had to do. And so talk a little bit about what happens when you do that. And then also, for those who don't, who, like, we all have trauma, but if there's nothing like super significant there that's really slowing them down, or they're relatively good at regulating themselves, but they're living in a culture that isn't built for nervous system regulation, mm-hmm. over time, what happens to them and their capabilities, and what kinds of symptoms are they going to see popping up?
Right.
And then we can go into, well, what happens when you do see those popping up? So what are we looking at?
Well, first off, how tired are you? How exhausted?
I'm always tired.
Always exhausted.
Tired. Yes.
And do you ever feel like you get enough sleep?
Never.
Right. And do you get a vacation?
Not this year.
Right. And are you cognizant of your well-being and your health?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, there you go. And can you stop and reframe in your mind? Can you challenge your own thinking and reframe in your mind and ask yourself a question such as, how important is this really?
Yes. I started doing that, though, when I learned the neuroscience of mindfulness.
Right.
And I realized, oh, there's more choices that I have than I realized I did. And that's actually a really hard thing to battle with, though.
It is.
Feeling as if you have a choice in certain situations.
Because a lot of times you feel like you don't.
Right.
You know, certainly with children, you don't.
Right.
Certainly with job, you feel like you don't.
Right.
Certainly with all of the community expectations.
Of course.
You feel like you don't. So the question, how important is this really compared to my emotional well-being? Because if you don't add that second part to the question, the answer is almost always going to be, this is extremely important.
Right.
And so we combine mindfulness with understanding where you are, what's your central nervous system doing right at this moment, with cognitive behavioral therapy or cognitive reframing.
Mm-hmm.
How important is this really compared to my emotional well-being? And when you place your emotional well-being at a higher level than it was previously, even if it's not at the perfect level,
mm-hmm.
but if you prioritize it just a little bit more, you can maintain it at a higher level.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how do you get to maintaining that at a higher level? You have to lower your expectations of yourself.
It's hard, isn't it?
Isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
That's the trip you up part of this.
Yeah. Because, well, and it's hard to manage other people's expectations or their experience that they've had with you. I've heard people say to me, I've seen you. I know what you're capable of. Mm-hmm. It's way more than this. And in those moments, you may want to punch them in the face. You know it's not what you're going to do.
Exactly.
I'm not going to do that. And, you know, these are people that you love and who love you too. And they come, they're well-meaning.
Absolutely.
They're coming from a place of like wanting good things for you, whether they understand you or not.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have had high expectations of yourself, and when you have been a high performer, a good masker, mm-hmm. I would say that I fit both of those categories.
Sure.
And I can still perform at a high level, not as frequently, and mm-hmm. maybe not in all of these areas that I once did. It's like, pick one.
Yeah. Well, and that gets back to the symptoms you were talking
yeah.
about. That's the first symptom of the broken light switch.
Right.
You start to see the bare wires.
Yes.
You start to see that it doesn't turn on when it's supposed to turn on.
Mm-hmm.
You start to feel the physical fatigue. You start to, you know, sit down, and the second you sit down, you feel like you could just fall asleep.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Once you finally relax.
Once you finally give yourself permission to relax.
Right.
You don't feel nourished. You're over-caffeinated.
Mm-hmm.
And caffeine's not a stimulant. It's an irritant.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
So it irritates your central nervous system, and that's what makes you feel like you're stimulated. And the top of your head's tingling
because
mm-hmm. you've activated all of these nerve endings in your body through the irritant.
Right.
And the acids in the coffee. So, yeah, give me a triple cappuccino, please, and I'll get through this next hour of work.
Or soda, where people are like, they're just, and I've had people say too, oh, well, better just get another cup of coffee to finish the day. And I just have to say no.
Right.
No, this was just, what I just did was extremely emotional for me.
Mm-hmm.
It was to a point like it made such an impact where it's on my mind. I have all this energy in me, like whether it's a pent up thing, if you need to go exercise after that, or if you need to ground yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes it's hard for me to explain what it's like when you're in fight or flight, but nothing's happened, you know?
Right, right.
And sometimes it's taking my shoes off and standing in the grass because I need to feel the ground underneath me to
yes.
be like, okay, we are here, we're coming back online, we're okay. Sometimes it's looking into the eyes of my children, like having to have that like eye contact where I'm just focused. Mm-hmm. On this moment and this moment alone. When I had infants, there were a lot of surrounding circumstances that would make anyone just feel shattered.
Mm-hmm.
But I could look at them, and I knew that I didn't want to lose that moment.
Yep.
And so I was like, I will be damned if I lose these precious moments, and I will not allow for them to not have a loving mother during this time. Mm-hmm. And I, like, as they've gotten older and they get opinions and they start talking and
yeah.
and you have to go through like the actual, okay, here we go. This is more of, I have to be on it. They're not just sweet babies. Like,
right.
You're not just going through all of these just little milestones. You're more now like, okay, now I'm actually raising a human. They're listening and watching every single thing I do. They mm-hmm. know if I'm unhappy. They know if I'm stressed. So I got to get it together. It's
right.
like you got to figure it out. And it's hard to manage all of that.
It's the next level of grounding yourself.
Yeah.
You know, the babies are a grounding factor, even though
yeah.
they're part of the chaos.
Right.
Right.
It was when I think back on it, I still have a hard time remembering that time. And we can talk about memory
mm-hmm.
in a second because mm-hmm. that is part of this too. But I at least remember that thought process that I had.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that my body was in a state of chaos. I knew that, but I could just zero in, and that hyper focus, whether that's a ADHD yeah. or trauma response, I don't know.
It's a little both.
Yeah.
But the hyper focus is you were able to grasp the one thing that was so important to you.
Yeah.
The one thing that, all else be damned.
Yeah.
I'm going to manage this one, and I'm
yeah.
going to do this one right.
Yeah.
And you know, sadly, as children grow up, and they begin to listen, they begin to see, they begin to talk, they begin to mimic. that's when it becomes more challenging.
Yeah.
And it's even more important to ground yourself. So, you know, finding different ways. You talked about standing in your bare feet in the grass to say, okay, I'm grounded here.
Mm-hmm.
What are the other things? You know, everybody's heard take a deep breath.
Right.
But how many people really take time during the day to take a deep breath? You should. Right. You absolutely should. Are you nourishing yourself physically, emotionally, spiritually?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and understanding just like how you ground yourself, how do you nourish yourself? What is it that is nourishing for you? What is it that helps you to slow down, to relax? What is it that you understand that is important to you? And how is it that you can prioritize and spend more time with that?
Yeah.
All of these are very easy things to say, but extremely difficult to do.
Oh, yes. I'm like, well, that takes out at least 4 days of my week.
Right.
Trying to stay grounded.
Yeah, it's a very simple process for very complex people.
Yes. Yes.
It's very hard to do, but you can do it. It's just a matter of rewiring your brain, just like the light switch.
Mm-hmm.
We would call an electrician if a light switch started feeling funny or making a squeaking sound or, you know, heaven forbid, sparking.
Yes.
You know, you would not hesitate to call an electrician, but we tend to ignore ourselves.
Dismiss it, talk ourselves out of it.
Mm-hmm.
All of that.
Oh, yeah.
Excuses.
Make excuses on top of excuses on top of excuses.
This, like all of this information is so important. I hope that if anyone has any questions that you at least can start looking for, you know, your local therapist. You reach for some of these books that we talked about, The Body Keeps the Score. If you don't want to see a highlight reel, you can go to Hattie Hawks on TV, on Facebook. You will see more of the reel because I want people to know that there's no reason to be ashamed of these difficulties. You are empowered when you learn more about it and when you understand and when you know that there's somebody out there, the both of us are out here. We understand you, we hear you, we love you, and we are sending you only the best vibes and prayers and all the good things that we can muster. So get that information, know that you are not alone. There's a lot of hope on the horizon. And there are like-minded individuals who are gonna be there for you. So Dr. Yeager, thank you so much once again.
Thank you.
All right. Take care. Love each other.